Hello? Can you hear me? Hello? Okay.
Can you see me? Nope.
It's okay. Okay. I'm gonna do my best. So yeah, my name's Sean. I am your drug addict, alcoholic speaker tonight. So I'm grateful to be here. This is my mom, Eileen, who's your next speaker. So you got a family speaker set tonight, which is cool. So yeah, I am first of all, it's very fortunate that I'm here. I nearly killed myself using, unfortunately. And yeah, it's a total miracle that I've stayed sober. And I've been sober since March 30th of 2016. So 7 and a half, almost 7 and a half years, something like that. Sober. So yeah, which is very fortunate. And so I'm gonna briefly share my story, but what I really want to talk about is alcoholism, and I'm gonna try to pass on what I've learned about alcoholism, and drug addiction. They're the same thing, but I'm gonna try to explain as best I can what it means to be an alcoholic. And I'm not gonna go into the war stories and all that. I'll just briefly talk about it, I guess, but you've all heard it or experienced it in some form. So, so I had a very good life growing up. I grew up in Danville, and I had every opportunity that every opportunity in my life, I truly did. And I had parents who really loved me and cared for me, and I wasn't horrifically abused. And the reason I'm saying this is because there wasn't some external reason, I don't believe. Maybe a few small things, but I just was born a drug addict and an alcoholic. I have the gene, or I don't even know if there's a scientific explanation for it yet. To this day, I don't even think they have one. But I was born with this problem, serious version of this problem, whatever it is. And so as a young kid, I can't think of anything that is too outstanding, except that I absolutely hated being in school. I did anything to get out of being in school. I hated it. I hated being in class. I hated sitting there all day. I just hated it. I don't know if that's relevant, but I did. And I think I felt sort of maybe a little bit lost and directionless as a kid, because I hated school and I hated sports. And so I didn't really know, a lot of my friends were either, they're really smart and good at school, or they were into sports or whatever. And I was just sort of something. I don't even know what I was doing, really. That's kind of how I felt. I just felt kind of a little bit lost, and not depressed or anything like that, but just no direction. And so by the time I am in high school, I started experimenting. I started smoking cigarettes. And then I started drinking, and it became I the thing that I felt lost, that I felt like I was missing, suddenly fell into my life. The excitement and the adrenaline of drinking, and started smoking weed and things like that, just was absolutely what I was looking for. And it was my passion. I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do. These other kids are doing this and that, and this is me. That's how I felt. I felt like I had identified with altering my conscience, essentially and truly. And that became the only thing that mattered to me. And so yeah, by 15, I was buying other kids' prescription drugs at school, from either that their parents had laying around, or that they had their ADD meds and all that stuff. And I was drinking, and I was smoking weed, and I just loved it, and I had a lot of fun. I'm not gonna lie, I absolutely loved it. My parents tried to hold me accountable. They did. They tried really hard. But I was uncontrollable, and I had, so I had, you know, I just I wasn't I didn't want to be accountable to anybody. I didn't have much responsibility at 15, and so I just took the, I just did whatever I wanted, basically. And no matter how hard people tried, whether it was school or my family, or maybe even my friends sometimes, no matter how hard someone tried to stop me or control me, I just had a mind of my own. I really did. And yeah. And unfortunately the consequences for behaving like that are great. And so by the time, you know, I'm 16 and 17, I'm starting to get into hard drugs. And I got put into a outpatient treatment center at 17. You know, Danville is a sheltered area. And so I was an outpatient near Concord or Martinez or Pleasant Hill, that area. And all of a sudden I was mixed in with people who were selling hard drugs. And so that's when I, you know, that's where I met my dealer and all that stuff. So they send me to, I get sent to treatment. I meet all these other fun people who I can hang out with basically. And yeah, so that was 17. You know, by the time I somehow graduated high school, I have no idea how that happened, but I did. You know, I was kicked out of the house. You know, I slept in the car and you know, for a night, and the next day my dad says, you can be homeless or you can join the military. And if you join the military, you can stay in our house for the next 3 weeks until you leave for boot camp. And I said, okay, I'll join. Why not? And I managed to hold myself together well enough for those 3 weeks to like do the entrance in stuff that you have to do, the MEPS, I think is what it's called. And then take the drug test and do all that stuff. And so I stayed sober for that, or sober enough to do that. And then I was sent to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri to be a military police officer. Can you believe that? And, yeah, that's, yeah. So they were gonna have this kid, be an MP, you know, and you can guess how that went. It was a disaster, and I was kicked out for drug use. So I got kicked out, for failing a drug test, of course, inevitably. You know, after a short period of time, they kicked me out. They said, you're done. They sort of gave me the option to try to stay in the Army with a different class, you know, maybe a truck driver or something like that instead, you know, or no, probably not a truck driver, probably a cook or something, who knows. But I never showed up for that meeting, you know. And by this time I'm using crystal meth, and I'm using cocaine, and I'm using heroin, and I'm doing all those drugs, and I drink alcoholically. And yeah, and then I'm gonna skip the next like 5 years. I'm just going to tell you, over the next 5 years, this is what happened to me. I'm going to try to explain why I think this was happening, but I would go into a treatment center out of desperation because I had burned all my bridges. I had sold and pawned everything and basically screwed everyone over, you know? And then I would be basically facing homelessness or going to treatment. So I would go to treatment. I would clean up really well in treatment. I would become the all-star in treatment. I would learn everything. I'd be like helping run the groups and stuff. And then I would leave treatment, and I would go into a sober house, and I'd be there for 2 or 3 weeks. And then I would just use again, you know, for no reason. And then I would leave. I would get kicked out of the sober house, figure something out for a few weeks. And then I would, you know, I would end up back in treatment again, basically at some point. And I literally did that for years. You know, I think I was counting it the other day. I think I went to 5 treatment centers 7 times. So I went multiple times to a couple of them. And I lived in, I want to say like 15 sober houses or something like that. And couldn't hold a job. I could get a job, you know, but I couldn't hold a job. I mean, I just couldn't do anything. And it was like that for year after year after year. And I was miserable. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. You know, there was something seriously wrong. And I had known about Alcoholics Anonymous, and in treatment, I had learned absolutely everything there is to know about Alcoholics Anonymous and about all the step work and the meetings and about addiction and how it works. Like, you know, when you go to treatment 7 times, you learn everything you need to know. And so there's 2 points I want to hit now that I think are important. The first point is, let me think which one is important. So I'll try to give an example. I'm going to use an analogy, and forgive me if you don't like this analogy, but I think it's a really good one to use. Okay. So here's my analogy. And this is going to explain, I'm going to try to explain why I was in this cycle of going to treatment, relapsing, you know, going back to treatment, relapsing, going back to treatment, relapsing, even though I had gained all of this knowledge about alcoholism. So imagine, imagine if someone wasn't feeling well one day, right? They're feeling really sick, you know, something is off in their body. They can tell. So they go to the doctor. The doctor says, I don't know what's going on with you. I'm going to refer you to a specialist. You go to the specialist, you're really feeling crappy. And the specialist says, I'm so sorry, but you have cancer, you know, and it's terminal. It's going to kill you. And you say, oh shit, well, that's not good. And the doctor says, but here's a treatment that could probably save your life if you're really vigilant and you go through this process. And the doctor says, you need to do your radiation. You need to do chemotherapy. You need to, you know, get something surgically removed from you, and all of these steps. And if you do all of these things, you'll have a chance of staying sober. Of being cured of cancer. Sorry. And you, as the person with cancer, you say, you know what? That's great information. Thank you. But I'm going to do this on my own. And you go to the bookstore and you grab every single book on cancer that you can possibly get. And you go to the local college and you start auditing classes, and you're sitting there and you're learning over the next 6 months while you're dying of cancer. You're learning everything that there is to know about cancer until you literally probably could get a PhD in understanding cancer. Is that going to cure it? Absolutely not. You're going to die. And it's the same thing with alcoholism, but no one can see that. Not people who are looking in from the outside and not the alcoholic himself. And that's what I learned, is that I had all of the self-knowledge about myself. I knew everything there was could possibly know about alcoholism, but none of that kept me sober. And that's one of the big things that we talk about in AA, is that like self-knowledge will not fix it. And they really reiterate that over and over and over again, is that you know, early on in AA, they were running into people who were dying of alcoholism, and they would give them all of the information about the program, and they'd say, you're an alcoholic, it's going to kill you, you're going to die. And those people would say, thanks for the information, but the fact that I know that I'm an alcoholic, I'll then be able to control the drinking or stop it on my own without changing anything else about my life. And that's why people die, is because they don't realize that it doesn't work like that. And Alcoholics Anonymous is fundamentally a program of action. And the people who I sponsor, they really go one of two ways. A lot of them who struggle will come into the program with a lot of energy and like really learning a lot, but they don't go and apply it into their life, and they end up relapsing. And then I have people who absolutely hate AA, who are frustrated with being there, who question everything, but they actually take the actions and do the program and they're sober. And so it's unfortunate that that the disease is that powerful, but it really is. You can't think your way out of it. And knowing that you're an alcoholic doesn't fix alcoholism. And that's one thing I've learned. The other thing I've learned is that it's a three-part disease. There's the physical part of being an alcoholic, and the solution to the physical part is complete abstinence, which is very simple. And so my program today is I don't take narcotics or weed, or I don't take any drug ever under any circumstance. I might take an ibuprofen if my back hurts really bad, but maybe. But and so that's the first part. The second part is the mental part of being an alcoholic, and that's the really tricky piece, because even after having physical sobriety, the mental obsession starts to set in after a few weeks of being sober on your own, and you'll basically convince yourself that you can take a drink again. If you're stuck in the first two parts, the physical and the mental piece, you'll see people get short periods of sobriety and then relapse, and then short periods of sobriety and relapse. But there's a third part of being an alcoholic, and that's the spiritual piece. And that is the piece that AA addresses solely. AA doesn't have treatment centers. It doesn't have detoxes. It doesn't have doctors. It doesn't have psychiatrists. It doesn't have medication. because the actual solution to alcoholism is a spiritual one. That's, it really is. I mean, you guys are all know the program. We've worked the same program that you do. And so, yeah. And so when I finally, when it finally worked for me is when I let go of, you know, I mean, I obviously maintained my physical sobriety, but I really only focused on the spiritual part of being an alcoholic. And that's when the mental obsession went away for me and I stopped wanting to use as strongly. And when the mental obsession went away, I haven't picked up that first drink and then set the whole cycle in motion again. So, that's pretty much what I've learned. And so that's all I got. Thank you. Grateful to be here. Yeah.